You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
The Sabres released their 2019-2020 season schedule. The season kicks off in Pittsburgh on Thursday, October 3rd, and Buffalo will host the Devils on Saturday, October 5th, for their home opener. Defenseman Brooks Orpik announced his retirement after 15 NHL seasons this morning. Orpik was raised in Amherst, New York, and had a total of 194 points in 1,035 regular season games with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals. He is a two-time Stanley Cup champion in a 2008 and 9 season with the Penguins and a 2017-18 season with the Caps. Forward William Karlsson signed an 8-year, $47.2 million contract with the Golden Knights yesterday. And that has it has an average annual value of $5.9 million. Karlsson had 56 points in 82 regular season games this past season and 5 points in 7 Stanley Cup playoff games. The NFL released the 2019 training camp start dates. The Bills will be at St. John Fisher College in Rochester. Rookies will report to camp on July 22nd. Veterans will report on July 24th. And the first practice is on Thursday, July 25th. Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill is expected to meet with NFL investigators in Kansas City tomorrow regarding recent child abuse allegations. The Johnson County District Attorney's Office announced earlier this month that the criminal investigation is no longer active, and Hill has been banned by the Chiefs from team activities since April 26th, when audio was released by KCTV5 of Hill and his fiance discussing injuries suffered by their son. He remains subject to a suspension under the NFL's personal conduct policy. The Bisons extended their win streak to 7 games with a 10-6 victory over the Pawtucket Red Sox last night. They face the Paw Sox again tonight in Pawtucket at 7.05 p.m. That is your sports update. Welcome back to One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown on a beautiful day here in Orchard Park. We're talking about guys who are undrafted in the National Football League, how good they could be, how good they have been in the past, and particularly which undrafted player on the Bills roster is going to make the biggest impact this season. We got one guy who's been waiting for a little bit on the phone. I'm going to take this call from Michael in Cheektowaga. Michael, you're on with Steve and like Chris on One Bills Live. What's on your mind, Mike?
Well, it's the land of the crabapple. I just wanted to say how much I enjoy the program. I miss Mr. Murphy. What I'm going to say is I'm an old man who's retired real quick. I've been around a long time. If the team stays healthy, I got a surprise here. Foster, but I think it'll be Beasley. And I think everybody's Groom. Do you remember the tight end for
Jason Groom.
Patriots? Right. So no one really knew, I don't think, that much about Gronkowski when they started out. He really, everybody talks about Brady, and he's the best, he's the greatest, whatever. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But he, I feel, helped that team tremendously. And that's what I want to say. I'd like to get your opinion, but I just want to say one other thing. I've been fairly lucky over the last few years. I predict the NFL winners because I have nothing else to do with my time. I will not advertise where I play this game, but in the last 3 years, I've won first place once, second place once, and third place once. For no investment, I've got a nice rate of return.
Right.
I'd like to know what the Bills' odds are, because I think they're going to surprise this entire NFL team this year.
Well, I know the over-under in Vegas is 6.5 for their win total, and I would be inclined to take the over, but I am not a betting man. Okay. I got two kids going to college soon, so that's just not happening.
Putting down the old college fund there. Yeah, go ahead, Michael. What else you got?
Oh, man, with all the, you know, with my former investment. So everything is fine. I enjoy the program, and that's all. I just wanted your opinion. But they got to keep team unity, and we got to stay away from injuries. To me, that's the key, because the NFL is so, every team is so close. And one more thing, team concept, character, skill, which I think we have. And that's it. I'll wait to listen to your
I appreciate it. My ass good. That's a good call. I appreciate it.
So I'm trying to. Was he saying I'm taking Foster, even though I can understand Beasley? Is that what he said?
I think he said Kroom, didn't he? He wanted to go with Kroom.
Well, he said he didn't want us to forget about Kroom, is what he said.
Right, I get it. And listen, Kroom had a great offseason. He's one of the guys that was up at the top of the NFL or the Buffalo Bill games, the offseason stuff that they do. The Ironman stuff. He was there, and he's really good athlete, and he's worked really hard at. And I think the thing that. And this speaks to the character that our caller Mike from Cheektowaga just mentioned. Guys with a lot of character, a lot of intelligence, the kind of guys that Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been trying to bring in, see guys like that have the ability to look at themselves in the mirror and look at their game, watch themselves on film and say, you know what, I need to work on this, this, and this. And they go out and do it. Other guys who aren't like that, they only work on what they already do well because it makes them feel good that they're successful doing what they do well. Right. It doesn't make them better all-around players. Jason Kroom has worked really hard on the facets of his game that he's not very – hasn't been very good at.
Like blocking.
Yeah.
And he struggled last year. You know, he wasn't 100% effective, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that. Like, he was not 100% effective in his blocking assignments last year, but, man.
Smart guys
I don't know if anybody worked harder at it.
Guys get better, Brownie.
And I thought that his blocking did improve as we moved into the second half of the season. And I think what we saw from him last year are encouraging signs of things to come. And what I mean by that is it wasn't every week, but there were – and again, much like Robert Foster in the second half of the season, because if you remember, Steve, McDermott and his coaching staff determined at that point in time, we're going to put a lot more young guys on the field. We're going to see if we can rely on young players – and see if we can help them mature, develop faster by putting them in regular season live game situations.
Let's see them.
And Kroom was one of those guys, and it wasn't every week, but I would say every other game, Kroom would have a splash play. He would flash. And you'd be like, ooh, look at that. Yeah. Look what he can do. And now the next step for him is how about you make a splash play or two every week? You know, provided you're getting the right playing time. If Tyler Croft is back in the equation off the broken foot, that could compromise that.
Sure.
But I think that what we have is a guy who, if he can take the next step, could be a bona fide contributor for this team in 2019. So not a bad guy to bring up.
So which undrafted player will have the biggest impact in 2019 on the Bills roster? You can take your pick from the four that we provided, the choices that we provided, or you can pick your own. Cole Beasley's got 47% of your votes. Robert Foster has 31%. Lorenzo Alexander has 17%. Levi Wallace has 5%. Now, Brownie, I want to bring this up to you, and this is kind of how we got onto this topic. The 25 best undrafted NFL players of all time. Now, sometimes every list is a little bit prisoner of the moment because you don't want to go all the way back to 1932 every time you go to these lists because nobody's alive who saw the guy play.
Right.
And it's kind of esoteric trying to get to the meat of who really was good and who you can talk to that saw the guy play or go back and look at films. But there are some guys on here who do speak for themselves. Like you go up to running back. You remember the running back from in 1997 from ended up playing for the Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens and Priest Holmes, a running back. He was a really good player, really productive player. His career was cut a little short by a hip injury. I remember, but still a guy
that was among the league leaders in rushing for like a 3 to 5 year period there.
Really a dominant player for two teams that used him, and he came out of nowhere and lost his job to the starter to Jamal Lewis, then signed with the Chiefs, and then ran for 4,590 yards over the next three seasons with 56 touchdowns.
Right.
Wow.
He was a point producer, no question about it. And the guy even before him, who was 25 on the list, I remember this guy vividly because they used to always talk about him being an undrafted player, was Rod Smith, the receiver for the Broncos. I mean, that guy was part of some good receiving cores there because it wasn't just him. I think he played at the same time as Shannon Sharp was there as the tight end.
And with
Ed McCaffrey.
Ed McCaffrey, yeah.
So they had a good group, but man, I mean, there was a stretch there about 3 or 4 years where Rod Smith was the go-to guy. After Shannon Sharp hung him up, you know, Smith was the go-to guy in that passing game. And for what he accomplished as an undrafted guy was remarkable for me.
You go down to number 23 on the list as quarterback Tony Romo out of Eastern Illinois, 2003. They went. He got to the NFL scouting combine because he was going to go to throw to other prospects, right? So, into the sudden, he got the Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints, was the quarterback coach of the Cowboys. He saw Romo throw, and he goes, you know what? We saw this guy, and the Cowboys signed him, and all of a sudden he gets the starting spot in 06, and he's, you know, four Pro Bowls and a human highlight reel, yeah. Tony Romo.
Not a lot of playoff wins, but yeah.
Well, that's a franchise thing as well.
Right, but that's true.
But I agree with you. He may lack some things in his game, but you can't,
right.
Coming from nowhere to play that position is huge. And, of course, the number 22 is Wes Welker.
Now,
one of the
here's the
most
thing,
famous slot receiver of his era.
Right, but here's the thing that is the most egregious thing about Wes Welker. It's bad enough he didn't go he went undrafted, okay, based on what he turned out to be. Dude got cut once and traded within his own division, Steve.
I know.
Traded in his own division. Okay?
Dolphins to the Patriots.
The Chargers cut him. Marty Schottenheimer was the coach out there at the time. He called it the greatest mistake of his career, cutting Wes Welker.
I don't know about that. Okay.
And that's another topic for another day.
Yeah.
But
I love Marty.
But then he gets traded. I mean, two solid seasons in Miami as a punt returner and as a slot receiver. They trade him to New England for, I want to say it was like a 3 and a 7. I mean, it was a pittance for what he did for New England, obviously, because in 5 of 6 seasons he caught 110 passes or more. And that's a guy who might have still played a couple more years even in Denver had the concussions not caught up with him. Because he had a lot of concussions in quick succession and had to hang it up.
Yeah, it's a 5 of 6
cut
seasons.
Once traded in his own division, Steve.
Yep.
What the hell is Miami thinking?
It's a crazy world, man.
That's all you got from me. It's a crazy
world. And I get it. You look at where.
Who was a world beater at wide receiver for Miami when they traded
him? I met Wes when he was with Miami early in his career because I was doing the CBS thing. And I get it. He didn't pass the eye test. When you looked at Wes, he was a guy. You know, when you get off the bus, everybody wants to look impressive. Wes wasn't impressive. I mean, you get off the bus and somebody's handing him.
But you had 2 years of film on your team.
I know.
I don't get it.
I know. So there you go.
I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but holy cat.
From zero to, you know, a guy who set the standard for that position for a decade, and it still does. And number 21, moving up, Antonio Gates, tight end from Kent State, power forward at Kent State. Wasn't a good size or to play guard or forward in the NBA, so he tried out with the Chargers. They signed him right away, and 952 receptions, and 16 years later, the guy's had a Hall of Fame
career. Came back to play another year last year.
Yeah.
After Hunter Henry had the knee injury, he came back to play.
And then there's
And good on the Chargers for that one.
Yeah.
As bad as cutting Wes Welker was, they made good on that because
right.
16 years a tight end. Right. What did he go to, like 7, 8 Pro Bowls or something?
And it's interesting, too, most of these guys on this list are – it's it. They're offensive players because those are the guys that are easy. Now, there are some, as you get closer to the top.
Never heard of this guy, Frank Gadsky, who won a bunch of championships with the Browns.
Well, in 1946.
Hall of Fame
you can
center.
Understand why. Now, I'll tell you what. You know what I know about Frank Gadsky? And it's interesting that you mentioned him. I met him a number of times. You know why? My first game as a professional football player was the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio.
Okay.
It was the year Joe Namath, Roger Staubach, O.J. Simpson, and Frank Gadsky were the Hall of Fame.
Oh, were they?
Were the Hall of Fame inductees.
Wow.
So he went in in 1985, he went in the Hall of Fame. And that's why I know him. That's because he went in with that group in that year. And 1946, he played for the Cleveland Browns. Hall of Fame career. The team won 8 championships. He never missed a game in his 12 seasons. So there you go.
Got to give it to the big uglies up front every once in a while,
you got to do that. Also, you got after him, you got Emmett Thomas, a guy who I grew up watching play with the Kansas City Chiefs, great defensive back out of Bishop College. Number 17, our guy, London Fletcher, made the list. John Carroll, 1998, St. Louis Rams, a 5'10 middle linebacker in the National Football League who played 16 seasons and started 215 consecutive games and over 2,000 tackles in the National Football League. Yeah, that's pretty good. Jeff Saturday, North Carolina, 1998, Baltimore Ravens he started with, and then ended up, of course, going to the Indianapolis Colts in 1999, the next year, and he became the linchpin for that offensive line that played in front of Peyton Manning for all those runs in the AFC. So Jeff Saturday on this list. And, of course, James Harrison, number 15, linebacker out of Kent State. 2002 he came out. He was with the Steelers, then he went to the Baltimore Ravens, then he went back to the Steelers in 2004, 2 years into his career, found his groove, and went on to be a two-time All-Pro first team, made one of the most memorable plays in Super Bowl history.
MVP.
Yeah, Super Bowl MVP on the defense. It was unbelievable.
Do you know who's not on this list, who should be on this list?
Who?
He's not in the top 25. I don't see him.
Who?
Hold on. I'm just going to make sure I didn't miss him. Jason Peters.
Yeah.
Jason Peters should be on this list.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's still playing too.
Yeah. I mean, 05 draft, he goes
these
undrafted.
These guys are out of the league though, aren't they? All of these guys.
Goes undrafted in 05. And I mean, he's still playing.
Yeah.
What is he? 15th season.
These guys are all
out of
the league.
I mean, the guy is a freak. I mean, he came into the league as a tight end.
Yeah, they signed him as a tight end. They knew right away though he's going to move to left tackle.
Yeah.
And if you ever watched this guy move and play. He ran a 4.5 second 40-yard
4.95
dash. 4.95? Oh, I thought it was way faster than that.
He ran a 4.95.
Did he?
It's either 4.95 or a 4.85. I can't remember.
So he was unbelievably fast.
But he was 305 pounds.
Yeah, he's huge. 6'4", 305 pounds. And then you watch these guys rush him at left tackle from the defensive end spot, and they're throwing these moves at him. He looks like a 5'9 point guard playing defense. He can move side to side. Yeah. They can't get around him. He gets in front of them wherever they go. He's so athletic at that size and that strength. Yeah, you're right. He is.
He should absolutely be on this list. Like
okay,
somewhere.
So
I don't know
him,
how high, but
we'll put him in front of James Harrison right there at 14.
I'd say that's probably somewhere in there between 14 and 16 is a good spot for him.
Larry Little, who is a guard for Bethune-Cookman he came out of Bethune-Cookman 1967 for the Chargers. He signed with the Chargers, traded to the Miami Dolphins in 1969, and he was a cornerstone for the Dolphins' rushing attack. He was one of the guys that helped him go undefeated in 72, retired in 1980, and inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 93. Larry Little, the guard from the Miami Dolphins. And, of course, the kicker, the guy on this list, the only guy I've seen on this list who's actually still playing is Adam Vinatieri, kicker out of South Dakota State. Not drafted, New England Patriots.
There's got to be a lot of kickers, though, that had consideration for this list, right? I mean,
well, nobody drafts those guys,
right?
Really, basically,
so,
but
I mean,
you think about unless you're
you
do know,
the
Sebastian
gold. I guess you put up the gold standard then.
Yeah, he's Mr. Clutch. He two of three Super Bowls for New England. He kicked the winning field goal. Adam Vinatieri. How can you say no? He's 1996 to the present. Here at the last top 12, 11, and 10, Bill Willis, defensive tackle from Ohio State, 1946, goes to the Cleveland Browns. Lou Groza, iconic name, kicker and a tackle, Ohio State, goes to the Cleveland Browns. And Willie Wood, who was a quarterback at USC, didn't get drafted, so he wrote a letter to Vince Lombardi, requested a tryout, and he got there, found out Bart Starr was there. He wasn't going to beat Bart Starr, and he said, well, how about if I play defensive back? He plays defensive back, goes to five titles, and goes to the Hall of Fame as a defensive back. Willie Wood, who is a quarterback out of SC.
Yeah.
Jim Langer, guard out of South Dakota, 1970, played for the Browns. Willie Brown, cornerback out of Grambling, goes to the Houston Oilers, but cut during training camp, then signed with the Broncos, made the AFL All-Star team twice, then got traded to the Raiders in 67, of course.
Can I just say this?
He goes on to the Hall of Fame. Who's trading
these Hall
of Fame guys?
I got to say, the caliber of players that were traded back in the old days, it blows my mind. Could you imagine people like this being traded nowadays in the NFL? They'd be talking about it for a week and a half.
Oh my gosh.
You traded somebody like Willie Brown, like what?
Yeah, Willie Brown they traded.
That's
unbelievable. This is the guy, and Willie Brown, remember, he's the guy, he intercepted the ball in the touchdown 11, and he runs right toward the camera.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's an iconic
right. He was a
bit
first
of NFL film.
First ballot Hall of Famer. Dick Night Train Lane, cornerback out of Scotts Bluff Junior College, 1952 for the Rams. Played 1 year at junior college, but he played 4 years in the military, of course, once he got out.
He asked the Rams for a tryout. They signed him. Played 14
that worked out
seasons.
Well. Can I have a tryout? Yeah, sure. Holy crap. Look at this kid.
He had 14 interceptions in 1952. It's a record that still stands to this day. Joe Perry, fullback out of Compton Junior College in 1948 for the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, same with me. All right, then you got this guy named Kurt Warner.
Mm-hmm.
Was cut by the Packers. Stocked shells before signing with the Arena League and the Iowa Barnstormers. We all know what happened to Kurt in 1995. He had three great seasons in the Arena League, signed with the St. Louis Rams in 98, and, of course, then became three-time MVP, led two different franchises to the Super Bowl, won two of them. He's a Hall of Famer, and deservedly so. He's number four on the list of all-time great undrafted players.
You see the story of the next guy? You don't see this anymore.
Emlyn Tunnell?
Needing money and told he had to go to summer school to play his senior year at Iowa, Tunnell instead hitchhiked to New York to try out for the Giants. Are you kidding me? It went on to have a 14-year career.
Come on, it's 1948.
As a defensive back and a punt returner. Hitchhiking from Iowa to New York? Do you know how far that is?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be, what is that, like 1,600 miles?
Hitchhiked to a 14-year career.
1,200 miles?
14-year career, hitchhiked to, retired as the NFL's all-time leader in interceptions and punt return yardage. The guy
hitchhiking from Iowa to New York. Come on. I got to Google it right now.
He did it in 1948.
That's
so
what I'm saying.
So think about the vehicles he had to get in.
He's in the back of a pickup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's
not like an F-150 he's getting into, right?
I'm just going to do Des Moines for argument's sake here.
He hitchhiked. How far is it? Find that out.
1,107 miles. That's from Des Moines, which is right in the middle of the state. I mean, I thought that would be fair. But if he was at the University of Iowa, he'd be in Iowa City, right?
Right.
So let's see if that's any longer.
Oh, my gosh.
That's actually shorter. 990. Right. So it's about 1,000 miles he hitchhiked.
Wow. All right.
Turned it into a 14-year career.
NFL's all-time leader in interceptions and punt returns. Good for him and good for the Giants.
He gets to be number three just for that.
Just for the hitchhiking. All right, number two, Marion Motley, fullback, linebacker, Nevada, 1946. He played for the Cleveland Browns.
My dad loved this guy.
Joe Perry, who I'm not sure who Joe Perry is.
Well, he was the fullback. He's the guy you mentioned three people ago.
Motley said he called Marion Motley the greatest all-around football player there ever was. After signing with the Browns after World War II, Motley had one of the most dominating 5 years of any running back. Listen to this. He averaged, in 1946, 8.2 yards a carry.
My dad said he was built like an icebox.
In 1950, he averaged 5.8 yards a carry.
My dad was a baseball guy. You know, he is a baseball guy through and through. He is a baseball junkie. He grew up in New York, and it's a baseball city, 100%. But one of the few teams that were on all the time
were the Browns.
You know, and they were playing the Giants a lot, so he would see a lot of the Browns. Marion Motley was, he said, that guy was so impressive. He was built like a refrigerator, you know, like an icebox square, and just ran over people.
Yep.
And that was back when the fullback was the guy that got the ball all the time.
Right.
It wasn't the
Cleveland
tailback.
Cleveland won 5 straight championships. Motley's body started to break down during the 51 season, but those 5 years earned him a spot in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His career average.
This is just stupid.
His career average is 5.7 yards a carry.
And you want to talk.
Still a record among running backs, as you might imagine.
And you want to talk about an embarrassment of riches, you know. After Marion Motley, they get
Jim Brown. Yeah,
it's
he
like,
shows up for 9 seasons.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a heck of a 17-year run at that position.
Marion Motley was number two all on that list and the greatest undrafted players of all time. The greatest undrafted player in the history of the NFL, according to this list, is standout quarterback, the University of Washington, Warren Moon. Certainly would have been drafted, but because of the era in which he played, nobody wanted an African-American guy to play quarterback. So he goes to the CFL, wins 5 Grey Cups, kills it up there, rubs it in the face of the NFL, comes back in 1984, and everybody in the league wanted Warren Moon to play for him. The Oilers hired his Canadian head football coach so that they would be sure to get him. They got him, and he's off on a 17-year run as one of the great quarterbacks in the league for the entire time. That guy
can
throw it, man.
I
and he was my teammate, too, I'm honored to say.
I mean, So they call it the Pro Football Hall of
Fame. I was his teammate, I guess I should say.
Well, either way. It's, yeah. They call it the Pro Football Hall of Fame because they do account for, you know, accomplishments in other leagues. I'm wondering if you combine his CFL yardage with his NFL yardage, is he number one all time?
Probably.
He's got to be there, right?
Probably. In the criteria for getting into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the words United States are in there.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it is.
They don't count the CFL stuff? Because I got to think Flutie would be high on the list, too.
They may count it.
If he ever, you know.
Yeah, they may count it, but in the bylaws, it is not in there. It's United States of America.
Okay. I did not know that.
So that's I always wondered that because
they always say Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, right. They don't call it the National Football League Hall of Fame.
They don't call it the United States Football Hall of Fame. But anyway, Warren Moon tops the list. I think it's a good list. I think he deserves to be on it. I'm happy with him.
My only argument is no Jason Peters. He should be on that list.
Well, he's still playing, so. All right. More coming up, One Bills Live. John Randall, one of the great undrafted players of his era, got to the Hall of Fame as well. He's going to join us at 2 o'clock. Steve Tasker, along with Chris Brown, on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. Stay with us. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. From One Bills Drive, we're talking about the best undrafted players in the NFL. We're also talking, it's that time of year where we'll kind of delve into a lot of different subjects, and it gives us a chance at this point in history, I guess, is that a good way to say it? At this point in history, at this point of the calendar, to turn our eyes towards other sports, you know?
Sure.
And
let's do
something happened the other day that caught my eye. I am the world's worst baseball fan. I don't like the sport.
Right.
I don't follow it.
I think you've already
stated
that.
It doesn't move fast enough for me. I don't like the way it works or the way it looks. All of that stuff. I'm just not a fan. And that's not to say that I don't think there are redeeming people in it. But what happened to the Mets the other day kind of got a lot of people's attention. Mickey Callaway, the
Mets manager.
Mets manager, and one of their pitchers, Jason Vargas, got into an altercation with a reporter following a tough loss over the weekend, right? So it's a Daily News. And you can imagine in New York, I would think, I guess not, but I thought that would kind of happen more often than I guess it does.
Right. They had a bad loss.
Right.
Their bullpen's been a mess all year long. So one of their starting pitchers is having a good outing. Callaway comes out, yanks him in the eighth. They bring in the reliever. And
he blows it.
Yeah, he blows the save. And so he's asked, you know, after the game, totally valid question.
Did you think about leaving a guy in?
Do you regret not leaving him in the way he was pitching, this, that, and the other? He answers those questions, this, that. It gets a little heated. It's a little tense. It's nothing serious. So the reporter says to him, all right, Mick, we'll see you tomorrow. And he thought he was being sarcastic, so he turns around and he gets all hot and bothered. He makes a run at him. He's stopped by players. One of the relief pitchers also makes a run at him, who didn't even pitch in that game. So you got two guys getting held back. There's no physical contact, but they say, you know, we'll kick your...
Right. It's a locker room.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So it got ugly. It was bad.
So get to the good part. The next day...
Well, the next day, the team issues a statement, and...
And it was a nice statement by an executive.
Right.
He was really articulate and good, I think.
And Callaway, in no uncertain terms, is told before the next night's game, you go apologize to the reporters and explain how wrong you were to act the way you did. And so I think we have sound of his initial attempt at an apology.
Mickey Callaway apologizing or not
attempting
apologizing
to apologize
to the media. Here it is.
Billy Martin punched a reporter one time. You know, I mean, it's just part of this game. You know, it's something that, I'm a passionate guy about baseball, and I'm a tough competitor. And sometimes you'll see it with the umpires. Sometimes you'll see it with the players. And the thing is you guys don't need to see it directed towards you guys. That's you guys have a job to do. I understand that. I've always understood that. And you guys don't need it directed at you. That's the number one thing that I know.
What's so, missing there, Steve?
He didn't say, hey, I'm sorry, I apologize for it.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah. Now you've got a guy. Now, the only thing he did admit was when he gets upset or he's been out of shape or he's getting too competitive or realizes he's crossed the line, he shouldn't be doing that with media members. You know, he's got to handle that in his own way.
So he's saying it's okay with.
But, you know, Billy Martin punched a guy one time.
Yeah, so I'm really not a reporter. That bad. So here's what happened. So that little exchange where he said, hey, I.
That's not something I should do.
That's not something
that's about as far as he went.
Right. So then it trickles back up the line, obviously, and the executives at the club are sitting there going and said, they're looking like, and they're saying,
well, you can see it upstairs. Yeah. How did it go?
Yeah. They're having the same conversation you and I are.
Yeah.
Well, he never apologized, did he? And then, of course, the media points it out and says, well, he never really apologized. Yeah. I don't know what that was all about.
Social media's going. Right. So there, Mickey Callaway said, I'm sorry, not sorry.
So the guy up at the top of the food chain picks up the phone. And it starts to trickle down about, you want to give that another shot?
Yeah. So 90 minutes go by,
and part B comes out.
Yeah, Callaway's got to go do the redo, because the word sorry was never uttered from his lips.
Right. So here's what he has the second time around.
Just real quick, you know, I understand that I got some feedback that, that I wanted you guys to know that in my meeting with Tim, I apologize for my reaction. I shouldn't. I regret it. I regret the distraction it's caused to the team, and like I said earlier, it's something that we'll learn from. It's something I'm not proud of. I'm not proud of the distraction. I'm not proud of what I did to Tim. For that, I'm definitely sorry. So
there it is.
Oh, there you go.
He squeaked it out at the end. We just got it in there. Like, here's the thing, Steve. Okay.
Go ahead.
As a manager of a Major League Baseball team in a major market city like New York that is known to have a tough media, we're talking New York, Philadelphia, there's a couple other cities, but it's really New York and Philly. Oh, yeah. Boston's tough.
It's tough because there's so many major outlets that are entrenched in your locker room.
Right, and those people are all competing for headlines.
Exactly.
And so they're going to be asking you tough stuff. Every day, especially in baseball, where you're playing a game almost every day, 6 games a week, 162 games. You got to have the thickest of skins. And right. If you can't, you're not going to be a manager for very long. So when you do mess up, whether you feel you should apologize or not, you have a bigger responsibility to uphold here on behalf of the organization. You're the face of the organization. The fans see you every single day. More than the players. Just say you're sorry, even if you're not. Just to give the proper public face on it.
Why are guys in locker rooms, maybe in general everybody, not just guys, but why is general everybody so unwilling to just say, you know what, I was wrong. I messed that up. I apologize. I'll try not to do that again. It was a mistake, and I won't do that again. I apologize.
Here's my only guess based on what happened here, okay? Guy gets into a verbal confrontation, threatens to kick somebody's posterior, what have you. The next day, the organization isn't happy with how he's handled the media because the media often is the one that shapes the message.
Sure.
You got the media on the wrong side of you, you're in trouble. You're already the Mets in New York City, second fiddle to the Yankees forever. You know, you're not doing yourself any favors. You got to fix it.
Right.
Okay? The only thing that I can possibly think of here as to why it was so hard for him to say, I'm sorry, is because he, in his mind, viewed it as, I'm backing down.
Right.
Like, I'm backing down from this. I challenged the guy, even though I know it was completely out of place. And if I say I'm sorry, now I'm backing down. And I'm wondering if there's too much ego there. It's either that or he's half cracked.
That's dumb.
Those are the only two answers I have.
You got to be in the greatest managers, coaches, teachers, executives, leaders that I've been around, the number one overriding, there's a couple of overriding characteristics that I notice. One is humility.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Second is preparedness. And if you're not prepared in every situation to handle the outside inquiries and the outside communications, and the third one would be a communicator. They're really good communicators. if you're not prepared to handle that kind of altercation or confrontation in a way that's graceful and calm,
yeah,
and well thought out, you're that.
Because in that first response,
you're not prepared to do the job.
You can hear it in his first response, Steve. He's trying to explain it away because he's a tough competitor, because it's been, you know, managers have done worse before. Billy Martin punched a guy. He's trying to explain that it's okay to react that way. I mean, it is the furthest thing from an apology.
Right.
He's trying to justify it
in his
first apology attempt.
Right.
And let me just say this, because I know you're not a baseball guy. Callaway has come under a lot of fire already for a whole bunch of things. Poor decision-making, poor management of the team, this, that, and the other. So I don't follow the Mets on a daily basis. Maybe this was something that was boiling up and reached to this point where he reacted in a way that was unbecoming of a Major League Baseball manager. But if you're in the wrong, just say you're in the wrong and be done with it.
Yeah.
You got to do a do-over on an apology? I mean, where are we? Are you seven? What are you doing?
I mean, it's almost the point where, as a punishment, the guy at the top of the food chain should just say, if you say anything other than what I'm going to write on this paper, you're going to be fired. And just write it out and say, I apologize. And even if he reads it.
And that's probably part of a larger problem, because if you know that Callaway is emotional, and if you know he can get bent out of shape with the wrong question, the PR director who's prepping him before these press conferences has to say,
what are you doing?
Has
man?
To say this, Mickey, you know you're going to get asked about yanking the starting pitcher. Let's think of a good response as to why you made that decision and how you regretted that it didn't work. It's unfortunate that it didn't work, but we thought it was the best decision at that time. And if you get pressed on it,
I don't know if baseball
just
do that.
Your best to steer the question. People here have done it for years.
Well, yeah, but this is football. I don't know if baseball has
it's
those
the same
guys
thing. Same animal.
Guys that bring guys
they
in
do it 162 times a year after every game. They do it before games. They do it more than anybody else in professional sports, just based on the schedule.
Yeah,
you've got to have your guy ready every single day.
I get it. I don't know.
It's a mishandling on that end, and then you mishandle the reaction to the screw up.
That's just one more. It's just one.
That's the Mets.
That's just one
in a
more,
nutshell.
It's just one more piece of straw in the haystack of the reasons I don't like baseball. Okay, we're gonna take a break. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. We're going to have John Randall on at the top of the hour. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. We just had a conversation a minute ago, a rare baseball conversation on One Bills Live about the manager, Mickey Callaway, who had to take two swings at getting an apology right. We also had one other thing that happened over the last few days. The 911 call, and I don't know if you heard about this, Le'Veon Bell had reported a robbery at his home, and he called the police. There was $500,000 in jewelry
and
cash that was stolen out of his house, and money and some other things. And his 911 call to the police was finally released. We have that 911 call, and this is not a joke.
Well, he said there were two suspects
that were
in his house when he left in the morning to go work out.
Right, don't spoil it. So here's the 911 call. I hope you can understand it, but this is a real thing. This isn't a joke. This is the real 911 call. Go ahead.
What was she wearing today?
When I left, she was in the bed. She was in the bed, not wearing clothes when she left. So I didn't see her when she, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay, and the other one, you said she looked more Hispanic. Is that correct?
Like, she looked more like, if anything, like, white or Hispanic, yes.
Oh, okay. How old is she?
She's 21.
And what was she last seen wearing today?
The same way. She was in the bed, too. They didn't have clothes on.
So Le'Veon Bell dials 911. His house got robbed by two girls when last he saw them were in the bed naked.
Yeah. Well, so, he had to leave early in the morning. He had to get a workout in.
So listen.
Like he usually does.
So you can imagine the world we live in today. When this came out and it hit Twitter, some of the responses that came back about Le'Veon Bell leaving the house and then getting robbed by the two naked women in his bed.
Social media has had fun with this. So here's the first one. You ready, Steve?
Okay, go ahead.
This guy says, I actually feel sorry for him. Here he is trying to be a committed, honest, in an honest relationship with these girls, and they just use him like that. My heart aches for Le'Veon. This one says, hey, everybody, you're burying the lead. Look at how dedicated Le'Veon Bell is to football. He left this situation to go work out. And then this person said, these comments are great. This person says, who in the world after a night like that is going to work out the next morning? Oh, man, you can't make it's this stuff up. It is fantastic.
The world we live in is an absolute mess.
Yeah. Brownie. And then this
absolute mess.
One more. You need that third girl to keep an eye on the other two is what you need. Yeah, Rookie mistake.
Do we have a drum roll? Can we have a rim shot for that one? It's unbelievable. This is stuff in a more sane world we don't have to hear about. But, man, this is like on everybody. You three clicks of a button and you can listen to that.
And then
stuff.
Here's a good shot at the Jets.
Yeah.
Despite everything they stole, they left his pile of Jets tickets sitting on the dresser.
Wow. That's the coldest cut of all. They left the Jet tickets. They left the Jet season tickets on the counter.
Oh, this is when social media is at its best, isn't it?
There's some pretty funny people out there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Le'Veon Bell, for continuing to make the Jets a dumpster fire. It is going to be a fun season.
Listen, here's the thing. Before they fired McCagnan, the general manager, the Jets looked like they were on a trajectory. There's like, wow, you know what? They've been doing it. They've been staying inside the lines. All of a sudden, they fire their general manager. They hired Adam Gase as their head coach, who had been at his tenure in Miami had deteriorated year by year in their ability to win games. Their roster had deteriorated. They tried to rebuild, couldn't get it done. They bring him to New York. They hire Greg Williams and Joe Vitt, two guys who were absolutely mortal enemies after a bounty gate scandal on a third team in New Orleans 4 years ago, where they were all suspended for an entire year from the NFL. The coaches were suspended for an entire year in the NFL after they all turned on each other and started pointing the finger.
Two words, Steve. Two words. Powder keg.
Oh, I said it yesterday. It's like storing all the ingredients to dynamite. Just store them right next to each other where nothing bad could happen. I mean, it is that is such a powder keg in New York. And with
just
the media,
light the
and
fuse.
It's the same media environment we were just talking about with the New York Mets, where it blew up in Mickey Callaway's face this last couple of days. It is the exact same recipe. And now you got Le'Veon Bell and all these issues that are. You know, that are dropped into that mix as well. It's amazing. And for guys like, I mean, we're sitting here talking about sports all day, every day.
Yeah.
And at this time of year, particularly in our sport, it's deep in the off season. The lights are kind of out for the only time they are in the entire calendar year for the next 3 weeks. And all of this stuff goes on. You sit here and you scroll through all the topics we can scroll through.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, nope, that's off limits. Nope, that's off
limits.
Well,
the shot.
We're not going to talk. And this Le'Veon Bell thing, I'm almost sad. I'm almost bummed we got that on the air today.
Well, I mean, as entertaining as the scenario that was painted by this 911 call was, how in the universe, when you are someone of this stature, of this notoriety, with this kind of wealth and that kind of stuff laying around, how do you leave the house without locking any of it up in a safe? Can you help me with that? I don't get that. Do you?
I think Le'Veon's got
are you
pretty,
doing that?
I think Le'Veon's got a pretty high opinion of himself.
Well, that doesn't change the fact of who you're dealing with. You got nobodies here. I mean, he probably doesn't know their names. Do you think he knows their names?
I guess not.
He was lucky he could pass along their phone numbers to the police.
All right, I got to move on. I got to get off this topic. It's just too dangerous. I don't like it. Right, we got to get out of here. We're going to come back at the top of the hour.
Football's important to Le'Veon, though. He went to work out in the morning. Good on you.
John Randall, one of the great Hall of Famer, one of the great all-time undrafted players in NFL history, is going to come on and talk with us at the top of the hour. This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.